Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's April 9th. 25 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giebel. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Tuesday to you. And weather-wise, it's going to be a terrific Tuesday across the Beehive State. We have high pressure that's now in the process of building in. So it's going to be a beautiful day if you want to spend some time outside. It'll still be on the cool side of things, but we kind of expect that for this time of year. The average high in Park City is in the upper 40s, and I think that we'll see mainly mid-40s this afternoon in Park City, while Heber sees a daytime high in the low 50s, but under mostly sunny skies, bluebird conditions, especially if you're heading up to the mountain, should be an absolutely beautiful day. And then into tonight, we'll go mostly clear with the overnight low falling to 27. So it is going to be cold again tonight. It just won't be quite as chilly compared to what we've seen this morning and what we saw yesterday morning. With high pressure in charge of our weather, our temperatures will continue to warm as we go throughout the rest of this week. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a daytime high coming in at 50 degrees, and you'll also notice the warming trend during the overnights as well, as tomorrow night we'll see an overnight low of 30 degrees, keeping mostly clear skies, and we'll continue to see mostly sunny skies during the day, mostly clear skies at night for both Thursday and Friday, but we'll really crank up the spring feeling Thursday into Friday, as daytime highs will be ranging anywhere from 5 to 15 degrees above our seasonal averages. I actually think we have a chance to sneak into the upper 50s in Park City by Thursday, which is almost 10 degrees above our average, and we'll drop to 38 degrees on Thursday night. And at this point, Friday looks like the warmest day of this week, as we could very well see a daytime high in the low 60s in Park City. For anybody in the Wasatch back that's been wanting the spring feel, it looks like Thursday and Friday will be the ticket right there. We won't be quite in record territory on Friday, as the record high on Friday in Park City is 67 degrees, but we won't be too far away with that high temperature coming in at 63. Then on Friday night, it's partly cloudy skies with the overnight low dropping to 40 degrees. But of course, as we know, as we go throughout this month, we go on the Utah weather roller coaster, and we'll start to see our temperatures ease back down as we go from the weekend into next week. Thankfully, though, it doesn't look like we're going to see really too much impactful weather through the weekend, because that high pressure looks like it's going to be a little bit stubborn, a little bit longer compared to that system moving in quicker that could be moving in Sunday into Monday. So that results in a slight chance for maybe a few showers on Saturday, otherwise mostly sunny with a daytime high coming in at 60 degrees. And then the chance of wet weather looks like it'll start to ramp up a little bit more from Sunday into Monday, with a roughly a 30 to 40% chance of showers on Sunday with a daytime high coming in at 57 degrees. And then by Monday, that probably brings us our best chance of wet weather at this point, with the daytime high dialing back into the upper 40s. So while we will be cooling down, doesn't look like we're going to see too much in the way of significantly colder air coming in. But we're still on that roller coaster. We'll still be going through our ups and downs. But over the next few days, we're definitely on that upward trend. And Thursday and Friday should just bring some beautiful spring weather, Leslie.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Thomas.
You're welcome.
And taking a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Drew. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Kind of fun to look across the range at the instrumentation and note a dip in temperatures during the solar eclipse yesterday. And we're joking that that eclipse had a lot to do with keeping the wet avalanches at bay. Yesterday, they were fairly minor in scope, for today, no such luck. We'll have direct sun for much of the day and warming temperatures. The danger will rise to moderate for wet avalanche activity on east, south, and then west. And those sneaky northwest winds, you know, with a storm passing by to the north of us, we're going to see these winds picking up out of the northwest. I mean, the guidance indicated later in the afternoon, but I don't buy it. I think so I've colored in some moderate danger up high for wind drifted snow, and just be alert for changing conditions if you're heading into the high country. And I think those wind slabs, developing wind slabs, will be something that should be on the radar by about the midday to early afternoon hour. So overall moderate danger. Just going to be an awesome day to get in the high country. It's beautiful. Skiing and riding's awesome. Travel's easy. Lots of coverage. Pretty nice day, spring. So, again, keep an eye for the wet avalanche activity and developing wind slabs.
Okay. Thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:11. Good morning. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Solid Waste Superintendent Tim Loveday. He'll be talking about the need for a new landfill cell, as well as the steps being taken now so it doesn't fill so quickly. Park City Planning Director Rebecca Ward previewing tonight's meeting on the Bonanza Small Area Plan and Traffic Study, as well as some other planning issues, and the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder, with an update on the search for a new Executive Director. Utahns turned their eyes to the skies for the partial solar eclipse yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that it was a chance for local students to get outside and learn.
Students were buzzing with anticipation at Summit County's Wildman School of Discovery, like 7-year-old Rome, who's in first grade.
I'm excited because we get to see it with the glasses, and it's orange because the solar eclipse is turning orange because the moon and the sun is putting it together, and it turns into orange.
The K through 8 charter school is divided into a lower or elementary school and an upper or middle school. Teachers had the upper school students who've already learned about eclipses split up in teach groups from the lower school. Digital literacy teacher Carla Willis explains.
They are very excited. You can probably hear the excitement here. The kids are outside. We have been covering solar eclipse and lunar eclipses for a while, and they've learned that the moon is going to partially block the sun today at 12:32, so about 50% of the sun will be blocked.
14-year-old Kian was one upper school student deputized for the day.
I think we came out a little bit early so then we can get everything set up, get the kids ready to look without damaging their eyes.
He's no stranger to eclipses. He went to Wyoming for the previous one in 2017 and enjoyed last October's annular eclipse, too.
I looked down at the leaves and I did a couple cereal box experiments with it. That one was pretty cool, but this one should be way more exciting.
It's also 6-year-old Hope's second eclipse, even if she doesn't remember the first. The Wildman student was born the same day as the 2017 eclipse, on August 21st.
What do you think of this eclipse? Have you looked at it yet?
Yeah.
Is it cool? What do you think?
All of these songs
have I think
come?
It's good.
What's your favorite part?
That it's a sad face.
The cool factor was reiterated by 7-year-old Gabriel, who explains what happens during a solar eclipse for the uninitiated.
The moon moves into the sun and it turns black in some places.
Have you looked at it yet through your glasses? What did you think?
It's so cool.
The partial solar eclipse lasted about 2 hours in Utah April 8th. According to the National Weather Service, it peaked at 12:32 with 48% of the sun covered by Earth's moon. NASA predicts the next solar eclipse will cross North America August 23rd of 2044. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council has been setting aside funds for a new cell at the Three Mile Canyon landfill. In the studio with an update, I have Solid Waste Manager Tim Loveday. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Let's see. So in order to avoid raising taxes last year, the county council cut $2.5 million from the budget, which was slated to go towards this new landfill. So what does that mean for you going forward?
Yeah, the bottom line is it leaves us short on space. We opened that new cell that we're in right now, and it was in July of 2019. And the engineering estimates at the time were it would last 5 years. So, you know, 2024 was where we were supposed to run out of space in that new cell. Now, we had a fudge factor in there. We thought we'd be able to go 6 to 10 months longer than that. We always build those in because you just don't know what construction delays will what you'll run into when you start into a new cell. Unfortunately, with COVID, we had a pretty significant uptick. It was a short-term uptick, but it was an uptick in the amount of waste we took at the Three Mile Canyon landfill. So we are flat out of space. We're about 2.5 months from having that cell full. So what we'll have to do now is go into the old area. Now, it was always designed that we would take the new cell and the old waste mass and merge those two together. And we'll do that twice with cell one, and then when cell two gets built, it'll go over top of one and over top of the old waste mass. So we're moving into the old waste area now and kind of filling backwards from what we normally would have under our operations plan. But it's all good. It'll work out fine. We can do that. I would prefer to have had that new cell built, but, you know, council has its challenges too, and so we're going to do everything we can to assist their direction there.
Yeah, so when you call a waste area, that's not technically a cell?
Yeah, a cell is more of a modern term. You know, we have a situation at Three Mile where, by definition, we were operating a dump because it's an unlined facility. Things were just literally thrown in a hole and covered with dirt for many years, and that was the way things were done in the old days. Part of my job coming on to Summit County was to build a new line cell that meets Subtitle D type standards, and that's what we did. But to get the maximum capacity, we have to merge those two, and that's how we were getting out to the 35-year type of capacity for a 3 Mile Canyon. We have to do it in stages. So that cell we built, cell one, was designed to be able to be filled for 5 years. To get the maximum value out of it, we have to build another cell beside it because there's a slope issue in there. So, even though cell one's worth 10 years of space, we can only get 5 years in it until we build cell two.
Okay, so when do you think that's gonna happen?
I've been assured that the money will be available next year, that we can move forward with construction, but the reality is there's always a delay. So the money is approved for next year. We'll go out to bid, but by the time that cell is constructed and the permitting from the DEQ, we're looking at 2 years from now before we'll actually throw garbage in there.
Wow. So in the next 2 years, then all of that's going to go into that kind of waste area.
We'll stay in the old waste area and start bringing it over. We're just kind of filling backwards from what we would have, and it'll work out. It just means a lot of rearrangement of roads that we have planned, and anytime someone throws a wrench in, you have some adjustments you have to make.
So the DEQ doesn't require the county then to get some kind of permitting then to put it into an unlined cell?
It's already permitted. Mm-hmm. Has been permitted since the 1980s, and DEQ requires that permit to be renewed every 10 years, which we've always done. It's kind of interesting here in the West. In the East, we went to line cells back in the early 90s. That was required by EPA. But in the West, it's much drier. So there was the thought that we didn't need to necessarily have a lined landfill because we just don't get that much water and infiltration. That turned out that's not exactly true. And so, now everyone for new areas moving forward has to be lined and has to have leachate collection. But if you have an old operating area, you can still fill that.
Okay. And that protects what? The water leaching into it? And actually, you're right above Rockport there, so how dangerous is that?
Yeah, it's groundwater protection. That's what those liners are all about. And those liners affect both the current operation. There's liners underneath that waste for the new areas. And then when you close a landfill, the cap has to meet at least the permeability standard of what's below it. So we'll get a synthetic cap ultimately on the landfill as well. But on older landfills, that's not the case. They're unlined. So that groundwater is more exposed. And so at 3 Mile Canyon, we're surrounded by monitoring wells, and we monitor groundwater 4 times a year and run statistical analysis to make sure that we're not impacting that groundwater. If it ever came up that we did, then we'd be looking at going into a corrective action situation.
Yeah. So what's the estimated cost of cell two?
Engineering estimate is right at $3 million. With the way things are going, I would expect that to get bumped up as we move into the next year. It seems like we can't get out from under this price increase, so.
Yeah, and you anticipate that cell would last how long?
With it, and going back up over cell one, it's about 17 years.
All right. We do have another landfill, though, out in Hennifer. Why not use that one?
Hennifer is permitted as a construction and demolition debris landfill. It's a different type of landfill than 3 Mile. So in years past, we could, as long as there was de minimis amount, some municipal waste would slip into 3 Mile, or not into 3 Mile, but into the Hennifer landfill. DEQ is very aggressive on that now. So we have to screen every load that comes into Hennifer, and it can only be construction and debris. We can't put furniture in there or hot tubs or anything like that. It has to be 100% construction debris. That said, Hennifer itself has taken in a lot because we have a lot of construction going on in Summit County. So our tonnages are actually up there as well. Now that landfill, we've got lots of space to operate there, so we've got over 30 years of life left there at the Hennifer landfill. And on the positive, Hennifer's sitting on a clay bank that used to be and still is on adjacent property. They mined the Hennifer clay there to make brick. So it's a very low permeability type situation. If we were siting a municipal landfill there today, it's likely we wouldn't have to put a liner in because there's a natural liner already in place. So it's a nice safe place to put C&D waste.
So you say that cell two get us out 17 years. Can you build a third cell there, or do you need to look for another location?
No, that'll get us the 17 years. We're in a good situation. We'll be probably 32 years out before we're full. We intend to build 5 cells total. It starts getting pretty crowded by the time we get to that 5th cell. And, of course, I'm always in hopes that technology will change and we'll have a lot less waste going in that landfill. But that doesn't seem to be happening as fast as we would like.
Yeah. And when we talk about what goes in that landfill, I mean, you know, we all have a couple bags every week of garbage. But when you start talking about hot tubs and boats and skis, I mean, just really big and furniture. I mean, isn't that what's hogging all the room? I mean, why are we worried about yard waste?
Yeah, you know, you would think that, and by weight, it really is. You know, the number one component that goes into our landfill that eats space is actually food waste. That represents 23% of space usage, within our Three Mile Canyon landfill. You know, food waste is something that we're starting to really focus on now, and I'm glad to see that other organizations have stepped up. You know, the Park City Foundation is engaged with their climate fund to really look at food waste, and I'm super excited about that whole process. The county council this past week, approved a proclamation to start really looking at food waste, and Park City has followed suit as well. So this is an opportunity now where you've got a private organization engaging with two major government organizations to try to really take a look at food waste. And this will move on out now into the commercial sector and the residential sector as well. You know, these are shocking numbers, you know, to think about. 23% by tonnage is what goes in our landfill, and we've studied that. We know exactly how much food waste is going in there. But that represents, because food waste is light, that actually represents 50 to 75% of the actual airspace in that landfill. So it's pretty significant. And
how do you know that it's food waste, though? I mean, people put garbage in bags.
Yeah, we literally had a consulting company come in, and they literally took the loads of garbage and measured down to the ounce everything that was in those loads over the period of a week. And Park City has done the same thing on a Main Street contract that they looked at as well. So we know very precisely about what's going on in the landfill, and it's broken up into dozens of different type items. So food waste is a big one by weight, and of course even bigger by volume. Cardboard was significant. That runs close to 10% of what goes into the landfill. So, you know, the county is really pushing this year a Save Our Space campaign. You'll start seeing that slogan a lot. Because it's not just about recycle, and we've all been taught to recycle, but this is literally about saving our space in the landfill, which is cash, because it's very expensive to build these cells.
Yeah. So we're talking about 23% food waste, 10% cardboard. That's only a third, though. So where's the other two-thirds?
Oh, it runs into, the gamut of everything else. I mean, within the landfill, about 80% of what's going into the Three Mile Canyon landfill is technically recyclable. About 60% of it is moderately easy to recycle, and 40% of it is just downright easy to recycle. And those are big numbers. I mean, just the food waste alone takes up about $1.4 million a year worth of airspace at the landfill. That's a third of our operating budget there at the landfill, so that's pretty significant. And of course, the cardboard, that's easy to get out and still has some value. And the thing I like about those particular two, even though, you know, that's not everything that's going into the landfill, is the technology's already in place to divert those from the landfill. We don't need to put those in there. It's easy to talk about waste energy, and I've been dreaming about it for literally 30 years. It's just not there. And it's not going to be there for Summit County for a long time to come, because we're just simply too small. But we can do something about these low-hanging fruits, the food waste, the cardboard, keep the plastics out. We divert metal. We separate out about 400 tons a year of metal and sell that off separately. We actually get some income back from that. So there are things we can do that don't require a PhD science degree to execute that we can just do right now.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the Park City Community Foundation, they believe that one of the biggest causes of climate change is that discarded food in the landfill. So I guess, how is it that their efforts could help you? Just by reducing that amount then saves you more space? And yeah. I guess, what's the partnership there?
Yeah, I'm really excited about working with them. I've been working with Andy over there, and you know, he's energetic, and that makes the rest of us around him get energetic. So it's pretty exciting to see this group coming together. You know, they're worried about climate change, and that primarily comes from the decomposition of food waste and the greenhouse gases that are emitted, particularly methane, as methane is very potent as a greenhouse gas. And as we all know, the landfill amongst county operations is the largest producer of greenhouse gas. So anything we can do to control what goes in there and reduce that amount of greenhouse gas that's emitted, that's a good thing. But there's also the benefit directly to the county in savings of that airspace. If all that food waste disappeared and we get 50 to 75% of our airspace, you know, saved from one year to the next, that is significant in both, you know, financial implications and environmental implications. So it's a win-win for everyone involved.
Yeah. You know, California, you've got 4 different trash cans every week. Why can't Summit County do something similar? I mean, they've got yard waste, compost, right, recyclables, trash.
Yeah, it's really frustrating trying to do it in a small scale situation. We've wanted to implement a green waste, compost opt-in program this year through the Republic Services contract. But the bottom line is, to make that financially feasible, we needed to have 3,000 people sign up. We only got 250. So that program is quickly going away, and we're looking at Plan B. What else can we do? I came originally from Virginia early on, many years ago. And in the county I lived in back there, we have multiple cans as well on the curbside. And, you know, an aluminum can thrown in your garbage would get you a $25 fine. And, you know, in the early 90s, 25 bucks was still something. You could go to McDonald's on that. But it's really tough here in Summit County, because people think we have a lot of money, looking in at Park City and everything. But Summit County is a very expensive place, even for the county to operate within itself. And our waste stream is very small. To really start doing things in a real positive manner, you're looking at needing about 500 tons a day, and we're down around 140 tons a day. So it's a financial driver, and then financial drivers become choices. So we only have so much money in the bucket. We have to figure out what we want to spend it on.
Yeah. There are these incinerators, though, right, that could help. Is that just way out of the ballpark then?
Again, the incinerators are pretty interesting. They've been able to do that down in Davis County, you know, and they're burning down there. The stacks are good enough now to where you can, reduce pollution overall, but they're very, very expensive to maintain. Anything in our size is just too expensive. We did aggressively look at waste energy over the past few years. And there was one company that was very promising. They were doing work for the Department of Defense and setting up waste energy facilities on bases, because the military bases had to become self-sufficient. But we priced it out, and to get a 10-year system, and that's about all they said they could get out of that, was a 10 years of use, was going to be somewhere around $142 million. So it's just...
All right.
Too expensive.
There's also those digesters, is that the right word?
Yep, I love the digesters. I think that you'll see Park City and the county continue to move in that direction. These things, that's not new technology. It's up and running. The thing I find really exciting now in the digesters is they're making package digesters that are more just single restaurant size, or, you know, small neighborhood size. I think those represent a real opportunity for us to make a difference in our food waste, because that's mostly food waste. You know, now to get to a digester, we would have to haul down to Salt Lake, and we're looking at that. That's something that the Park City Foundation, I think, will ultimately examine very closely. You know, the other option, if you can't digest, is to compost. And so, you know, we've tried to work with some folks over in Browns Canyon, Spoil the Soil and others, on doing that, and we would like to see them grow and increase their capabilities as well.
All right. Yard waste signups are happening. Again, this would be that somebody would have to pay for to have their green waste or yard waste taken away?
Yeah, and that program's dead. That's okay. The one we needed 3,000 people to sign up by April 1st, and we got 250.
Okay. So, in the meantime, then, everyone's just going to throw it back in the garbage.
Unfortunately, you're sending it to me, and I really don't want it. So.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention, Tim?
No, I just I really appreciate everybody paying attention to their Save Our Space program as we move that forward this year. And like I say, we are very excited to work with Park City and the Park City Foundation on the food waste issue. I think that can make a huge difference for the county.
Okay. And I was going to ask also, I mean, in order to raise the funds that you're going to need to build the new cell, are we going to see fees increase again this year?
You know, we haven't talked about that yet. Mm-hmm. The reality is on any given day for a resident in Summit County, it's costing over $400 a ton to manage the recycle, and it's about $150 a ton to manage the just the regular municipal solid waste. We are an enterprise fund, and we're dedicated to trying to break even, but we're nowhere close. It costs overall about $265 per residential property for us to operate the landfill and the solid waste division, and we're currently, you know, we have an annual fee of $80. The rest comes out of general fund. We've looked at a lot of different ways of trying to close that gap. Formation of a district was always high on my list because then it just becomes its own taxing agency. But as it is, we're caught in this in between of we have a fee, but we're also pulling it out of property taxes. There's plenty of concerns on both sides on being transparent on how that money's spent. So we're still working on it, a fee, you know, my recommendation, if we were going to do a fee, we need to get closer to the point of what it actually costs. But that's up to council, and we'll make those recommendations again next December.
Okay. Tim, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Tim Loveday, again, is Summit County Solid Waste Manager. Joining me now in the studio with an update from the Park City Planning Department, I have Planning Director Rebecca Ward. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start first. The final community meeting for this phase of the Bonanza Park Small Area Plan will be held tonight, 5:30 to 8 at the Park City Library Community Room. So the city has spent so much time and money on this already. What do we have to show for it?
So this is the final phase of the small area plan, which includes all 200 acres of the Bonanza Park neighborhood and Snow Creek area. And when the city initiated this small area plan, there was also a feasibility study for the 5-acre site within the plan. And those projects have been moving forward. This is the first community meeting that will be focused on the 200 acres. And so what the consultants are doing, they have consolidated all of the community input. And I want to say thank you because we've had great community interest and input throughout this process with hundreds of people attending community meetings and providing surveys. And we've also had input from the Planning Commission and the City Council through work sessions. And the consultants are taking all of that community input, pulling together what they've heard, and then bringing forward that draft material for a final review with the community this evening.
So do we have a conceptual plan for this now, or it's not specific enough?
These are the concepts that will be in the final plan. The draft plan is scheduled to be completed in a few weeks and then presented to the Planning Commission and the City Council. So while this is the final community meeting, that small area plan will continue to go through a public process. There will be future opportunities to weigh in through public hearings.
So are there any zone changes needed at this point? I know that there was also some changes that may need to be made to what's called the fronted protection zone.
Yes, so our current zoning has really led to the built environment that we have now, which really prioritized surface level parking for the different types of uses and separation of uses within the neighborhood. And what we're hearing from the community is that moving forward, there's an opportunity to mix those uses to create a really vibrant people-centered neighborhood where you have residential as well as restaurants and retail, coffee shops, those types of mixes. And so that will really require looking at the current zoning and figuring out how we can craft a code that would help shape a neighborhood with that mix of use. We have also heard from the community that this is a neighborhood for locals and local businesses and that it should remain that way. So there could be opportunities through code amendments to look at a potential cap on conventional chain businesses and looking at the balance of nightly rental and transient uses with long-term residential uses. Also, opportunities through the code to make sure that there's green space, community green space, trails and pedestrian connectivity and prioritization of people and transit riders in the neighborhood.
Yeah, but at this 200 acres, there's not a lot of vacant land.
There's very little vacant land.
5 acres is where the vacant land is, and that's not this.
Yes. However, we do anticipate several projects, several major redevelopments within the neighborhood. And so this is really the opportunity to set the vision for the future of the neighborhood and then make sure that our code helps incentivize the type of development the community envisions.
All right. And some of those major redevelopments, I mean, we've seen one with the DoubleTree. We have heard about plans from the Windsor property there where the storage units are. And then, of course, Snow Creek itself, the shopping center there. Is that what we're talking about?
So we do have pending applications on the Iron Horse Master Plan development. That area is potentially going to be redeveloped in the coming years. As you mentioned, the Yarrow property, the Park and Kearns Master Plan development, there's a pending application for that property. And we have Engine House under construction. And so we anticipate as these properties are redeveloped, that will be a catalyst for additional development in the area.
Okay. And then lots of parking mitigations, but I think those will be explained at the meeting tonight. And
so, yes, really, I think some of the key topics moving forward will be height, traffic, and parking. Park City's favorite three topics, I think, and for very good reasons. So as the future of the neighborhood is evaluated and we think about the type of development that will be in the area, those are things that we really want to be certain to carefully craft and make sure that impacts are considered and fully mitigated.
All right. And I know that this isn't the project you're overseeing. It's Jen McGrath, Deputy City Manager, about that 5-acre site. But staff did get grilled by the council at last week's city council meeting, saying by the time this would get under construction as proposed, it will have been 10 years. So what's taking so long with this?
So for the 5-acre site, as you mentioned, the City Council did express an interest in evaluating opportunities to expedite the process. They also expressed an interest in discussing the priorities and uses for the site. And there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle, including the small area plan, undergrounding transmission lines, and soils testing, which is underway. So with the undergrounding of the transmission lines, the City and Rocky Mountain Power commissioned a study in November. That's wrapping up, and we anticipate that will be presented to the City Council in the coming months. Also with the soils testing specifically for the 5-acre site, the City was awarded a grant through the state and the EPA. And that grant is for a comprehensive report that would evaluate the potential contaminants. There's a draft report that's currently under review with the state, and we anticipate that the final report will be provided to the city and presented to the council in the coming months. So there are a lot of moving pieces, and as you mentioned, the City Council has expressed an interest in expediting the process for the future of that site.
Yeah, so will there be changes in setbacks or zoning required on this 5 acres?
So it depends on what the final draft plan is for the small area plan. What we've heard from the community is that right now there's a 3-story height maximum, and there's been some support for a potential of up to 4 stories if there are community benefits provided as part of the development. Right now, we also have, as you mentioned, the frontage protection zone, which leaves project review up to the Planning Commission discretion through a conditional use permit if it's 30 feet to 100 feet back from Kearns. And so evaluating whether there's an opportunity to establish more consistent criteria for predictability moving forward, those are all things that are being evaluated.
All right. Let's see. The Land Management Code amendments, this was to settle kind of the Treasure Hill problem of figuring out this back of house square footage once and for all. What happened to those? I mean, what, as I recall, they were unanimously recommended by the Planning Commission a while ago. They were not approved by the City Council when, at the council meeting, the council heard from a number of developers. By then, a deadline to get those amendments approved under state code had passed. So, as I recall, the mayor formed a committee. Now what? I mean, do we have committee recommendations? Have they even met?
Yes, so the Planning Commission did prioritize amending what are known as accessory uses, as you said, the back of house uses for master plan developments, and they were unanimous in their recommendation to the City Council. The City Council requested additional outreach and recommendations from a task force. So that task force was formed. The City Council also directed a new pending ordinance be issued. So that was issued, that kind of put a hold in place while the task force evaluated the amendments. So the task force, it's a 7-member task force with one Planning Commission liaison. And they've met in December, January, and February. They had their final meeting April 3rd, and they have come together in their recommendations. They're currently drafting a memo, and they'll present their findings to the Planning Commission and the City Council.
Okay. Now, the city also hired a consultant to help the city kind of clean up its code. Where are we in that process?
Clean up its code. I'd like to clarify that their scope was a little more limited. So we do plan on doing a comprehensive update to the Land Management Code after the general plan process. In the meantime, the Planning Commission has prioritized areas in the code to work through. So what Lisa Wise Consulting and their sub-consultants specifically looked at, in our current code, when projects come to the Planning Commission, applicants can ask for parking reductions. But there's really no set criteria in what long-term obligations the projects may have to keep that parking reduction. And so what the consultants have done is they have crafted standards that would help the Planning Commission establish requirements for projects that request these parking reductions to help mitigate traffic, and also to establish standard transportation demand management strategies for each project that would have consistency in the different projects and also long-term enforcement. And so that would build in some flexibility and future Planning Commission review if the uses within sites change or there are other changes that would require a reevaluation of those parking reductions, there would be a process set up in place for those. Additionally, they have been evaluating obstacles to affordable housing development, and that includes accessory dwelling units and potential amendments that would make it easier for property owners to build those on their lot, as well as some potential flexibility within the affordable master plan developments. Now that the city's reviewed and approved two of those, the Planning Commission has recognized some opportunities to refine that code and also to maybe reevaluate what's required with uses. Right now, half the square footage needs to be affordable units, the other half can be market rate. And there may be an opportunity to incentivize the types of development the city and community needs by allowing some of that non-affordable square footage to be commercial or other uses.
Okay. Moving on to the citizens' appeal to the Utah Supreme Court regarding Park City Mountain's lift application. As we know, the Planning Commission upheld the appellants because the application, they believe, did not meet city code. So where are we with that?
So that's correct, and that is continuing to go through the process with the courts.
All right, so no word from the Supreme Court whether or not they're going to make a ruling on it, or are they've passed it back to the appellate court, or?
I don't have an update on that, no.
Okay. And any word why Vail has not submitted a new application for chairlifts?
So we have not received any new applications from Vail, no.
Hmm. How is tonight's Planning Commission item for Deer Valley's new chairlift any different from what Park City did?
So Deer Valley has an application before the Planning Commission tomorrow evening. They are proposing, so last year they installed a new lift that was not part of their overall plan for the ski lift infrastructure as part of the master plan and development agreement. So anytime there's a lift that's not part of that adopted plan, it requires the applicant to go before the Planning Commission. So this will be Deer Valley petitioning the Planning Commission for approval of a new lift. It's Lift 7 that they're proposing to increase beginner terrain.
So aren't the same code requirements, though, conditions part of this Lift 7 application as well?
Can you clarify?
Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, won't they be facing the same requirements that Vail, you know, had to go through, which the Planning Commission found that they did not meet because it wasn't part of their original approval?
I see. Thank you for clarifying. So there are criteria in code that the Planning Commission reviews when it is a conditional use permit. There are different requirements between the different development agreements, so that does come into play. But the Planning Commission will be looking at the same criteria for a new CUP. I think the difference is that their review of the lift at Park City Mountain Resort, they were reviewing that for compliance with the plan for future ski lifts. Their review of Deer Valley's request tomorrow evening is a new conditional use permit for a lift that is not included in their development agreement.
All right. And real quick, can you walk us through the Prince Home appeal? We've got a brand new appeals board, and they're going to be the final decision maker here unless it goes on to court.
So in February of this year, the City Council appointed the first ever 3-member appeal panel. Appeals of Planning Commission final action used to go to the City Council, and now that will go to this 3-member appeal panel. And these appeals of land use applications are very technical, so there are some requirements to be on the appeal panel that these members either be attorneys or have planning expertise and background. And so the City Council appointed Adam Strawn. He's the chair of the appeal panel, Esteban Nunez and Matthew Day. They heard their first appeal on March 4th, so they have met. And they are scheduled to review the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval of the 220 King Road plat amendments and conditional use permits. That appeal is scheduled on Tuesday, April 30th, and they meet in council chambers, and those meetings are just like any other meeting where the public can attend in person. There's also the online option to participate.
Okay, and so do they take any kind of input, or they just have presentations by the applicant and the appellant?
So they will hear presentations, they will conduct a public hearing, and then they can affirm the Planning Commission's decision, affirm in part, reverse in part, or remand back to the Planning Commission.
Would that happen that day, or would they take it under advisement and then meet again to discuss?
So I think it will be up to them. I think if they need more information, they could potentially continue that.
Okay. Rebecca, I got to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Rebecca Ward serves as Park City's planning director. And on the phone with an update from the Christian Center of Park City, I have the executive director and the co-chair of the board of directors, Rob Harder. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. It's good to hear your voice, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. So where's the Christian Center now in terms of hiring your replacement?
Yes, great question. We just had one of our top candidates this past week, literally last week. And so we're narrowing down, we're getting down, I would say, to the hopefully the final steps of getting my replacement. And so assuming that all continues to move forward, we're getting close.
All right.
So, yeah. So we're excited, and as soon as, of course, we make that decision, we'll make a big announcement and let everybody know, and we'll be excited to unveil the new executive director.
Yeah, so you're talking 2 weeks, 2 months?
I think we'll know within 2 weeks, yes.
Great.
I think so.
Now,
yeah.
I believe the search was nationwide?
It was. Yeah, we did. We got a national search firm, and that was very helpful, actually. I think we were able to get candidates that were beyond just Utah. And I think for this particular role and the organization that we have now and the size of organization, that was really helpful just to have a wider pool of candidates to just select from. So that was very helpful.
Yeah. So how difficult do you think it's going to be, though, to find somebody from out of state who can afford to move to Park City? I mean, especially at a job at a nonprofit where the pay is certainly less than the private sector.
You know, that is a big challenge, Leslie. That's been one of our biggest issues. You're absolutely right with this process is finding someone who can, you know, find affordable housing. You know, that's the bottom line. It's the biggest issue. So far, the candidates we've selected and that have been interested, that has been something we're working with them directly on. But that is no doubt a big hurdle. And so we're hoping to be able to find a solution and a creative way to make that work.
Mm. So how has your job changed?
You know, it's funny because people have asked me multiple times, you know, because it's been now about 7 months since I, you know, first announced that I'm in transition out of my role. So really, my job has not changed very much. I'm doing the exact same thing, keeping the organization moving forward. We've had a lot going on, of course, a lot of great things going on. But really just to the eye of prepping the team, prepping the organization for this transition probably has been the biggest change. It's just really kind of preparing for the future. What does this look like once the person comes in? So the idea would be really just to have a really good, healthy handoff, pass the baton off. And then, as you mentioned, I'll be moving into the board. As soon as that executive director is placed, I'll move right to the co-chair to serve alongside with Susan Swartz.
All right. When we see almost half the chairlifts close at Park City Mountain Resort overnight, it's a good indication that the J-1 workers have left. Can you talk a little bit about the season that they had here? Of course, you host those monthly dinners for them every Tuesday night. Or not every, once a
month. Yeah. Exactly. You're right. No, it's been an interesting season. You know, to your point, I know we've talked on the show before last year and last couple of years, actually, there was just reports of overcrowding, people renting one bedroom apartments to 9 different, you know, international students. And it was just a lot of real difficulty finding good quality housing options. That has been really different this year, Leslie. Now, again, most of this is anecdotal, but we have heard from various international students that do come to our Tuesday night dinners that most of them were able to find housing. So some did find in Heber, some found in Salt Lake. But in terms of local, I heard a lot of reports of employers providing housing for them, the Stein Erickson, Deer Valley. And of course, the biggest one is the housing unit right there at the base of the canyons. We knew a lot of people that found housing there. It was a huge help to them. We opened our basement again to international students in our place. And they said, for the most part, people were able to find housing this year, which was a unique difference. So I was really glad to hear that. Now, again, some still had to travel if they were in Heber and or in Salt Lake. But I did feel like the pressure and the complications we've had in the past were not as severe this year.
Yeah, it certainly didn't sound as desperate as we have heard. So, yeah, adding 1,100 beds sounds like it really made a big difference there at Slopeside.
It seemed like it, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Whatever happened to that case where we had that, I don't know, 9, 12 different J-1s in one room? They were being overcharged. I mean, like,
right.
That's paying $1,000. Did they ever get their money back, or do you ever know what happened?
It was terrible. I never heard the ending of that one. No, I never heard, but it was a terrible situation. I'm really glad that it got some, actually, I think it got some national attention. It certainly got, you know, statewide attention because it was just an egregious example of not of taking advantage of somebody, you know, so, but I didn't hear. So if you ever hear, I'd love to hear mm-hmm. the next step and whatever happened to that.
Okay. Finally, wanted to mention that you're already accepting donations for your back to school basics, huh?
I know, it's hard to believe. So we're actually having registration at the end of this month, April 30th for Park City and May 2nd for Heber. Yeah, what we've tried to do, we always try to make our programs better each year. We're trying to make that registration process better, smoother before school ends so that everyone kind of knows, the parents and the kids know, okay, when it comes back, because we typically offer back to school basics right before school starts. So we felt like it's better to get everything, all the information locked in, and then of course we'll communicate through the summer, but that way it's all organized. And so yes, so we are taking and receiving any donations. This is mostly school supplies, backpacks. Of course, we're going to take them to the outlets again where they can go shopping, so we can always receive support financially if you want to give. We're still trying to hopefully hit that price mark of $100 per child to go shopping with. We do get discounts from the stores, and that helps, you know, bring the price down of the clothes, because obviously things have gone up in price. So that is coming up. You can find out more information on our website. But yeah, that registration is the end of this month. And I'll mention this too. We've done this the last couple of years. I think, as you know, we've really turned that into kind of a community fair of resources. In other words, we'll have a lot of community partners there at the registration, because we feel like what a great opportunity before school ends to not just learn about back to school basics, but learn about People's Health Clinic, Peace House. I think Park City Community Foundation will be there. So we're trying to provide a lot of different community partners there so these parents can continue to learn about all the different resources we have here in the community. So that'll be a fun event again on the 30th and then on May 2nd for Heber.
Okay. Well, look forward to hearing about your announcement. Rob, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Hey, you bet, Leslie. Thanks so much.
Rob Harder serves as the executive director and co-chairman of the board for Christian Center of Park City.